This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Grand Chessboard, 11 Years Later, Part 2, Target Russia, Preparing for Global War. On May 9th, the Chinese People's Daily commented, quote, "If we look at U.S.-Russian relations closely, it is clear that we are standing at the edge of a new Cold War. As the Russian economy grows stronger, the U.S. simply cannot sit back and relax. It must continue to contain the nation to prevent it from rising again. By deploying its national missile defense system in Poland and also at the Czech Republic, Washington is no doubt targeting Russia. The likelihood of a new arms race will increase dramatically. The possibility of another Cold War does exist." That was written in the Chinese People's Daily on May 9th, 2008. It didn't take long for the new Cold War to heat up. On August 8th, Georgian military forces that had been backed by Israel and the United States with 1,000 U.S. troops training the Georgian military and Israel supplying military advisors and weapons, Georgian military forces attacked the capital of South Ossetia, a part of Georgia that has been seeking independence for a long time. In response, Russia moved its peacekeeping forces that had been stationed in South Ossetia into Georgia. 70% of the buildings of the capital of South Ossetia were destroyed by the Georgian military forces. At least 2,000 people in South Ossetia and 150 in Georgia were killed in the conflict. And the International Committee of the Red Cross stated that 40,000 people were displaced in areas around the conflict zone. Republican presidential candidate John McCain was in daily contact with the Georgian president Saakashvili. In fact, Saakashvili said that he was talking to John McCain twice a day. He had also been consulting with Senator Joseph Biden, the vice presidential candidate of Democratic Party presidential candidate Barack Obama. Joseph Biden went to Georgia. On Monday, August 25th, he released a statement right after his Georgia trip. Quote, "I left the country convinced that Russia's invasion of Georgia may be one of the most significant events to occur in Europe since the end of communism. The war that began in Georgia is no longer about that country alone. It has become a question of whether and how the West will stand up for the rights of free people throughout the region. The outcome there will determine whether we realize the grand ambition of a Europe that is whole, free, and at peace." Senator Biden has everything reversed. It wasn't Russia's invasion of Georgia. It was Georgia attacking the capital of South Ossetia. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the declarations by Senator Biden and those of McCain and those of the entire apparatus of spokespersons for the American ruling class have signaled a new departure, namely the determination to deploy the attempt to dismantle Russia as the signal moment for announcing the preparations for the prospects of a nuclear confrontation with Russia itself. These are the outpost declarations for a resurrection of what we came to know as the Cold War, but what was in fact the determined confrontation of imperialism with any opponent, and particularly the former Soviet Union and now Russia, as an obstacle to the crisis of capitalism being resolved by the outright seizure of resources around the world in military confrontations ad seriatim, of which 9/11 was a prior pretext and now being supplemented by a pretext of Russia resurrected as the enemy of U.S. capital.
They are resurrecting Russia as the enemy. As Biden says, he's going to work with the administration to seek congressional approval for $1 billion in emergency assistance for Georgia, with a substantial down payment on that aid to be included in Congress's next supplemental spending bill. $1 billion for the nation of Georgia. Most of that will probably be military aid. This is $1 billion as there are extensive cuts in education. There are extensive cuts in housing assistance. There are extensive cuts in health care assistance with Medicare and other programs. This is what we have with the vice presidential candidate of the Democratic Party, Joe Biden. Joe Biden, Mr. Military around the world.
Well, Maya, I think we should take a moment to look at what are, in fact, the political realities of what is called Democratic Georgia, because it is a leitmotif of U.S. ruling class representatives and this suppliant and completely collaborative media in presenting the conflict in the caucuses as the violation of a bastion of democracy, namely Georgia. The constant reference to Democratic Georgia as a symbol of the free world is put in the context of a struggle against an authoritarian, totalitarian Russia redux. What, in fact, are the realities of political life in Georgia? Last November, in the midst of mass protests against his regime, Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili employed outright dictatorial methods. On November 2nd, opposition demonstrations had begun to sweep through Tbilisi, the capital, demanding democratic reforms and the ouster of Saakashvili. Now, these protests had been backed by a number of oligarchical figures themselves, including the billionaire media tycoon Badri Patakatashvili, but he was doing this as a way of advancing his own ambitions by giving vent to mass grievances against intensive government repression and the desperate living conditions of the population in Georgia. The so-called democracy in Georgia, in fact, was a starvation republic based upon totalitarian rule. Tens of thousands of people massed in Georgia's capital city. The demonstrations continued for five solid days when the state police, acting on direct orders from Saakashvili, used gas and bullets and water cannons and truncheons to disperse the rallying protests. There were 600 immediate emergency requirements for people who had been shot or brutalized by the special forces of the Saakashvili regime. Saakashvili declared a state of emergency. All democratic rights were suspended, formal rights, such as freedom of expression, the right to assembly. All independent broadcasting was halted even before this state of emergency was declared. Only the state-controlled television station was allowed to broadcast. In fact, any journalist or voice that was in any way supportive or even reporting on the mass demonstrations was removed from the air indefinitely. During the crackdown, Saakashvili called for snap elections to be held less than 2 months later. All media were under the de facto control of Saakashvili. The two opposition leaders, Konstantin Gamsakhurdia and Shalva Natashvili, were declared wanted for treason. Patakashvili, who had faced a government investigation for plotting to overthrow the government, was forced to withdraw from the elections, and then he died suddenly in London at the age of 52. All Georgians are convinced that he was assassinated by Saakashvili's killer squads in London itself. During the election campaign, election observers from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe reported that the election was placed in total doubt by the fact that Saakashvili had used state money and blackmail and vote buying and destroying of ballots of opponents. All rivals were under arrest, under police investigation, in exile, or barred from running for office. After the victory in this democratic election, the opposition stated that the vote had been completely manufactured and manipulated. Saakashvili's vote surpassed by 20% what the actual numbers had been established to be, and which an opinion poll had already released 1 week earlier. Saakashvili's regime faced massive criticism from foreign capitals and human rights organizations for, quote, the assumption of dictatorial powers. It's interesting to note that the U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, Matthew J. Breiser, a close ally and personal friend of Saakashvili, acknowledged that there were, quote, more and more reports of people being grabbed on the streets, taken out of stores, brutalized and beaten, and then disappeared. The NATO head, Jaap Scheffer, responded by acknowledging that there were violations of human rights and limited himself to the observation that the imposition of emergency rule and the shutdown of all media outlets were, quote, not in line with Euro-Atlantic values. In fact, the, quote, excesses, unquote, of Saakashvili in gunning down peaceful protests were not aberrations. The State Department itself in 2008 in its country report on human rights listed the following in relation to the Saakashvili government. There have been reported deaths due to excessive force, torture, mistreatment of detainees, abuse of prisoners, massive use of force to disperse demonstrations, terrible conditions in prison and pre-detention facilities, impunity for police officers, overuse of pre-trial detention. The report states respect for freedom of speech, press, assembly, and political participation is absent. The report is actually extraordinary insofar as it establishes what amounts to a massive disappearance campaign against all opponents of the regime. This is the reality of Democratic Georgia, around which McCain and Biden and Obama and the suppliant press are beating their breasts.
Let's go back to what Joseph Biden said. The question is whether or not and how the West will stand up for the rights of free people throughout the region. The outcome there will determine whether we realize the grand ambition of a Europe that is whole, free, and at peace. When was the last time we heard such language? This is the language of the Cold War. This is the language of all the administrations, whether it was the Clinton administration for the breakup of Yugoslavia or Bush 1 and 2 for the assaults on Iraq. This is the language now of creating a Cold War or a hot war with Russia. Ralph?
Again, Biden. I have consulted with dedicated U.S. Air Force personnel. I have spent hours in talks with Georgia's president, prime minister, parliamentary speaker, and other national leaders. We are discussing how Georgia and the West will respond to this crisis. I have conferred extensively with U.S. Ambassador John Teft and with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice about how the United States will and must meet this challenge. When Congress reconvenes, I shall work with George Bush to seek congressional approval for $1 billion in immediate assistance for Georgia, a substantial down payment, i.e. this is only the little beginning. This money will help the people of Georgia recover from the damage that has been inflicted on their young democracy. This $1 billion commitment will be matched by others. Via the collaboration of all elements of the ruling class at the moment of this Democratic Party convention could not be more transparent.
Ralph, let's look at the New York Times, August 26th. Georgian president vows to rebuild army and pursue control of enclaves. Tbilisi, Georgia. C.J. Chivers and Michael Schwartz reporting. President Mikhail Saakashvili of Georgia said Sunday that he planned to rebuild his country's shattered army and that even after its decisive defeat in the war for control of one of Georgia's two separatist enclaves, he would continue to pursue a policy of uniting both under the Georgian flag. It will stay the same, he said, of his ambition to bring the enclaves South Ossetia and Abkhazia under Georgian control, now as ever. Separately, the White House on Monday announced that Vice President Dick Cheney would visit the region from September 2nd, stopping in Azerbaijan, Georgia, Ukraine, and Italy to discuss the crisis. What's revealing in this article is that Saakashvili said that Georgia had gained allies in the world and would embark upon a campaign of rebuilding its army that laid down arms, that left the dead just lying there instead of bringing them along with them as they escaped the onslaught of the Russian troops. Remember, Georgia unmistakably attacked the Russian troops first, despite what we read in the press over and again. Saakashvili predicted that continued American support and said that he spoke by phone with the presumptive Republican nominee for president, Senator John McCain, as often as twice a day, as I mentioned before, and that he was in regular contact with Senator Joseph Biden Jr., picked to be vice president on the Democratic Party ticket. Again, Saakashvili says there has been tremendous solidarity. Ralph?
I think we should take a moment to examine the concerted effort by all elements of the ruling class to deploy, first by preparing for Georgia to be incorporated into NATO, secondly by preparing for the Ukraine to be incorporated into NATO, thirdly by stationing a missile defense system, a so-called defense system, in the Ukraine and in Poland and in Czechoslovakia. In fact, these are forward missiles. This, in fact, is the signaling of the reintroduction of the prospect of a nuclear exchange with Russia, a nuclear exchange that puts on the table, as both Biden and McCain have intimated, a preemptive nuclear strike against Russia, as was prepared during the period of the Soviet Union. Let's take a moment to look at who the figures are. McCain's top foreign policy advisor lobbied for Georgia. That is the article by Andrew Tillman on August 12th. John McCain's top foreign policy advisor, Randy Scheunman, has for years been an essential conduit between the United States and Georgia, the former Soviet republic that has been, quote, pounded by the Russian military for the past week. He was Georgia's top lobbyist in Washington. He had taken leave from his lobbying firm, Orient Strategies, where he is still listed as president of the firm, and for which he received $900,000 officially from the Embassy of Georgia. Scheunman is tight with the Bush administration and the neoconservatives in Washington's foreign policy establishment. He is a former aide to Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi. Scheunman is, quote, Randy Scheunman is a vital nexus, and he made Tbilisi feel as if it were wedged into the back pocket of Dick Cheney. The article continues. There's quite a bit more on the central role of Scheunman as the key lobbyist for the Georgian regime and in preparation for military confrontation with Russia.
Let's go back and look at Joseph Biden. Joseph Biden, the vice presidential candidate.
By all means, certainly do that.
The World Socialist website author, Patrick Martin, on August 25th, in his article, Obama Selects Biden to Reassure the U.S. Ruling Elite, discusses Biden as an establishment figure, in particular, the relationship of Biden to U.S. foreign policy. In the 1990s, writes Martin, with Bill Clinton in the White House, Biden was one of the principal proponents of U.S. intervention in former Yugoslavia, a role that he describes in his campaign autobiography, published last year, as his proudest achievement in foreign policy. In the mid-1990s, he called for the U.S. to arm the Bosnian Muslim regime against Serbia, and then advocated a direct U.S. attack on Serbia during the 1999 Kosovo crisis, joining with like-minded Republican senator to introduce the McCain-Biden-Kosovo resolution, McCain being one of his best friends, authorizing Clinton to use all necessary force against Serbia. This legislative proposal provided a model for a 2002 congressional resolution authorizing Bush to wage war against Iraq, which Biden co-authored with Republican Senator Richard Lugar. The Bush administration opposed the Biden-Lugar resolution because it was limited to ridding Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, and successfully pressured the Democratic-controlled Senate to adopt a broader war resolution for which Biden voted. Very important to look at this. Biden was one of the most fervent Democratic supporters of the reactionary 2005 legislation overhauling consumer bankruptcy laws, making it more difficult for working class and middle class families to escape debt burdens. And this on the national front, but also we have to remember that Biden is also a proponent of the Patriot Act and the author of a reactionary crime bill. But returning again to foreign policy and Iraq, Biden has been in support of increasing the scale of U.S. troops, of 100,000 additional U.S. troops, and most importantly, has proposed not just the breakup of Yugoslavia, but the breakup of Iraq into separate Sunni, Shia, and Kurdish statelets on the model of what he proposed for Yugoslavia and what the U.S. put into effect. And when Secretary of State Colin Powell was making his notorious appearance before the United Nations Security Council in February 2003, Biden gushed, quote, "I am proud to be associated with you. I think you did better than anyone could have because of your standing, your reputation, and your integrity," end quote. And remember that Powell's indictment of Iraq has since been proven to be 100% false. Ralph?
Well, we have to keep in mind, Maya, that the Powell speech around which Biden was gushing concerned the invention of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. It was at that time that the evidence for the role of Saddam Hussein in the events of September 11th was presented by Powell by virtue of showing that al-Zarqawi had received a prosthesis while he was in Baghdad, as if receiving a prosthesis implicated Saddam Hussein in the events of September 11th, which is what was asserted by Powell. Of course, the interesting thing about this is that al-Zarqawi had already been killed, as has been, we've documented this in various programs. But that aside, the fact that he did, in fact, at a prior time receive a prosthesis goes to the issue to whom the death of the young American who was presumably beheaded was attributed to al-Zarqawi. They not only grew him a new leg, but they brought him back to life. Now, that is the scenario in which Colin Powell was fabricating on behalf of the Bush administration chemical and biological weapons in the north of Iraq, which were later established by bourgeois journalists themselves as total fabrications, for which Joseph Biden provided orchestration and cover. Now, it's interesting to note that Biden, in his capacity of chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, had been in regular contact with Saakashvili long before and continuing throughout the, quote, crisis with Russia, unquote. The Minneapolis Post reports that just this past weekend, and this is August 25th that this the article occurs, Georgia's president, Mikhail Saakashvili, had asked Biden to return to the country again. He is in daily contact with Biden, as indeed he is with McCain. And sure enough, Biden visited Georgia for crisis talks and announced he would visit it on subsequent weekends. "I am going to Georgia to meet with President Mikhail Saakashvili and to discuss what is to be done." He met with Prime Minister Lado Gurgunditsa and U.S. Ambassador Georgia George Teft. He has continued to consult Condoleezza Rice and John McCain himself, who is in regular contact with Saakashvili. Who else is Biden consulting? Senators Joseph Lieberman and Lindsey Graham, who happen to be strong supporters of the McCain's White House bid, are within the circle. So this ruling class that purports to be presenting antagonist candidates, in fact, we see so manifestly in this orchestrated crisis, the realities of the ruling class in control of the two big property parties with one name, never so clear as in the supporter of the Iraq war, the call for its escalation, the call for the fragmentation of Iraq, the champion of dismantling Yugoslavia, the advocate of increasing the military confrontation with Russia, and indeed even the nation in the form of Katharina Vandenhoeve, who are sycophantic supporters of Obama and of the Democratic Party, were compelled by this reality to post an article in the current issue. The key issue relating to U.S.-Russian relations demonstrates that Biden has been wrong. A fervent champion of NATO expansion, a bipartisan policy whose consequences we witnessed in the recent and ongoing Russia-Georgia conflict, which is a disaster, she writes, has done more to damage U.S.-Russian relations than anything that has occurred between the two countries. And she writes, when Biden traveled to Tbilisi during the conflict with August to flex his foreign policy credentials for Obama, he told Georgia's President Saakashvili of his support for that country's immediate admission to NATO. And she goes on to say that the admission to NATO was intended to prepare for the invocation of the NATO obligation to go to the military assistance of Georgia for a confrontation and a war that had long been prepared by the United States and Israel. And we'll go into the more of that. Biden and John McCain were, quote, as the Nation article says, prepared to take the United States to war on behalf of Georgia. He appealed to Saakashvili, the man who precipitated the bloodshed with a U.S. and Israeli-trained military attack on South Ossetia on the night of August 7th. But as Ronald Steele stated in the Sunday New York Times, the leader of the Western Alliance ought to be expected to tone down the bombast, but in fact, what is at work here is a deliberate orchestration of a major military confrontation with Russia, part of a long-standing plot, if you like, to engage Georgia in a military attack on
South Ossetia.
South Ossetia and Abkhazia as a precipitating element in a confrontation designed to bring the NATO powers and the United States itself into direct military confrontation with Russia.
Ralph, in the second part of this program, we're going to go in depth into the basis of this and how it was all created and the man behind it, the author of the Grand Chessboard. But before we do that, I want to return to the placing of the so-called missile defense in Poland, because this is relevant to what you were just saying. First, the United States intends to transfer immediately a Patriot anti-missile battery from Germany to Słupsk on the Baltic Sea, about 100 miles from the Polish border with the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad. The New York Times noted, quote, American troops will join the Polish military, at least temporarily, at the front lines facing east towards Russia. The American soldiers stationed there will serve as a sort of human tripwire, ensuring that any Polish-Russian conflict quickly involves the United States. The United States agreed to an obligation to defend Poland in case of attack with greater speed than required under the current procedures of NATO, which Poland joined in March 1999. We have to remember now that Poland also had demanded high-tech anti-aircraft systems as the price for basing the missiles. And the U.S. had first had refused to do this, considering it didn't want to escalate a Cold War situation with Russia. It didn't want to create one. But once we had the assault of Georgia into South Ossetia and Russia responded appropriately by defending itself with troops, we have the U.S. acceding to the Polish demands for the high-tech anti-aircraft systems, and a pact was wrapped up within days of the appearance of Polish President the Polish president, alongside the Georgian president, Mikhail Saakashvili, at an anti-Russian rally in Tbilisi. Ralph?
Well, Maya, let me reference here an important article in the Baltimore Sun, apropos the presumptive opponents, Biden and McCain. McCain and Biden old friends. Men have worked together for decades. The Associated Press and published in the Baltimore Sun on the 24th of August. Longtime political nominal rivals but personal friends, John McCain and Joe Biden, are reprising their roles that they have mastered for decades in the exclusive circles of power in Washington.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Grand Chessboard, 11 Years Later, Part 2. Ralph?
The Baltimore Sun article referencing the relationship between McCain and Biden is very significant. As I cited, it states that both are veteran members of that exclusive club, Biden heading the Foreign Relations Committee and McCain forging a campaign finance effort. Both are old hands. Their ties make it less surprising that McCain, the Republican candidate for president, picked up the phone yesterday morning to call his old pal, just named the running mate of Democratic candidate Barack Obama. It was a brief call between friends, said McCain's spokesman Tucker Bounds. And they go on to state, McCain and Biden forged a close alliance over the years, and compliments have flowed between them. Biden proposed in the 2004 election cycle that McCain build ties with Democrats and actually had proposed McCain as the vice presidential candidate along with John Kerry in the 2004 elections. A, quote, deep interest in foreign affairs has shaped McCain and Biden and their alliance. In 1999, the two co-sponsored a measure authorizing the use of all necessary force and all means, quote, unquote, in Yugoslavia. And indeed, both of them signaled that there was not enough force on the ground in Iraq. Biden stated after visiting Iraq that, in conjunction with McCain, that it was necessary to increase the troops on the ground. Biden supported the funding and escalation of the war in Iraq in conjunction with McCain. They are allies in this conjunctive effort. They continue to be close colleagues in the orchestration of the escalating conflict with Russia, with the pretext being the events in Georgia.
And Ralph, we can see immediately what is meant by some of the $1 billion of assistance to Georgia, and what is meant by what you are accurately calling the military buildup. On Sunday, the U.S. guided missile destroyer USS McFall docked at the Georgian port of Batumi as part of what President Bush and the Pentagon have called, quote, the military humanitarian mission. And we should add that the Democratic Party also calls it the military humanitarian mission. And this is intended to aid the former Soviet Republic in the Southern Caucasus, Georgia. The McFall is an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer. It is outfitted not only with so-called humanitarian aid, it is outfitted with an array of weapons, including the Tomahawk cruise missiles, which can carry either conventional or nuclear warheads. It also has a sophisticated radar system. And according to U.S. Defense Department spokesman Brian Whitman, the U.S. Coast Guard color cutter Dallas has also been dispatched to the Georgian coast, and a third vessel, the Navy command ship USS Mount Whitney, is being loaded up in Italy. So we have here the U.S. sending ships, warships, into the Georgian ports. The Russian military intelligence has said that NATO ships in the Black Sea are carrying more than 100 Tomahawk cruise missiles with more than 50 on board the USS McFall alone that could hit ground targets in Russia. The Georgian military has concentrated equipment and forces along the border with South Ossetia near the Russian troops that have checkpoints in a 5-mile buffer zone around the pro-Russian enclave. And the Georgian parliament voted on Saturday to prolong the official, quote, state of war, end quote, with Russia until September 8th. Ralph?
David Rising, the Associated Press writer in the San Francisco Chronicle on Sunday, August 24th, elaborated on what you've just been citing, Maya, in his article called U.S. Navy Warship Sails into Georgia with Aid. Let's look at what this humanitarian aid is. Baby food, diapers, bottled water, and milk in minimal supply. But what is instructive here, as you indicated, the McFall, the Arleigh Burke-class destroyer, is outfitted not just with Tomahawk cruise missiles, but the nuclear warheads, which they refuse to comment upon, have been clearly established as being present on the ship. When pressed after a Russian disclosure that the McFall indeed was carrying nuclear weapons, the Navy said, quote, for security reasons, the Navy will not confirm whether the ships are carrying nuclear weapons. The deputy chief of Russia's general staff declared that the arrival of this ship and those of other NATO members are designed to increase tensions in the Black Sea and to prepare for actual military conflict. That has to be understood within a very specific context. August Cole, in his article in the Wall Street Journal on August 16, states, attack on Georgia gives boost to big U.S. weapons program. Russia's attack on Georgia, notice the way they have framed this, of course, when the initiating attack was that of Georgia, designed to entrap Russia conquering and destroying the two enclaves of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Russia's attack on Georgia has become a source of huge support for big U.S. weapons programs, including fighter jets and high-tech destroyers that before had to battle for funding. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has spent much of the year attempting to find a rationale in regard to the military's most expensive and ambitious weapons systems, such as the F-22 Raptor jet, which Gates, in fact, considered to be unsuitable for lightly armed and hard-to-find militias, warlords, and terrorist groups. And indeed, this is an arsenal that is much more suited to confrontation with a major power. And indeed, the powerful chairman of the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee, Democratic Representative John Murtha, quickly seized on the situation in Russia to state that it indicates that the Russians see the toll that operations in Iraq and Afghanistan are taking on the United States and is preparing for a direct military confrontation. Wall Street stock analysts see the invasion as an opportunity to make bullish calls on the defense sector. The report in JSA Research in Newport, Rhode Island, called the invasion a bell ringer for defense stocks. Gates himself stated that this new conflict will cause the United States to completely rethink its strategic relationship with Russia. And indeed, this is a part of the campaign to orchestrate a massive increase in military expenditure every time capitalism is in crisis, every time imperialism needs a pretext for further adventure, they manufacture one. From September 11th to the events in Georgia, the article continues. High on Mr. Gates' list of programs has been the F-22 Raptor made by Lockheed Martin with help from Boeing, the Air Force's best fighter jets, another program, the Future Combat Systems, a futuristic $160 billion effort to modernize the Army with new hardware. Boeing and SAIC Inc. have repeatedly retooled the program, and indeed, at the same time, $12 billion a month projected outlay has been prepared, not merely with respect to Iraq and Afghanistan, but for the massive repairing and overhauling of equipment, military equipment of the United States.
When the troops start coming home, Ralph, that's just what the operations in Iraq and Afghanistan will require. That's $12 billion a month just to repair and overhaul existing equipment. That isn't alone the incredible buildup that we're talking about, $160 billion effort that they are asking for in order to modernize the Army with new hardware and electronic gizmos, with lead contractors Boeing and SAIC, as you mentioned, being the ones to get the money. And the F-22 Raptor is made by Lockheed Martin with the help of Boeing and other companies that make the component parts. Now, we have to remember that the F-22, which the Air Force considers the best fighter jet, hasn't even flown any missions over Iraq and Afghanistan. They make it very clear in this Wall Street Journal. The change in administration comes at a time of record profits and sales in the industry, reflecting historic highs in the defense spending. And a common refrain, says the Wall Street Journal, has been that the next administration will realize how dangerous the world is once the commander-in-chief gets briefed on the myriad threats to U.S. interests.
Here's how the Chronicle addresses this issue. Of $12 billion a month. The Russian situation makes the debate over massive reequipment of the U.S. military a front burner issue. The threat drives procurement, said a defense industry official. It doesn't matter what party is in office, quote unquote. It doesn't matter what party is in office. Mr. Gates' approach was codified in the Defense Department's strategy document and emphasizing a balance between carrying out unconventional warfare missions while simultaneously fielding forces capable of handily defeating adversaries like Russia's or China's military. Mr. Dunn, Michael Dunn, president and chief executive of the Air Force Association, a retired Air Force lieutenant general, stated if U.S. F-16 and F-18 fighters were carrying out combat missions over Georgia, they would be in grave danger from highly advanced Russian surface-to-air missiles on the border that the newer plane like the F-22 can evade. Even before Russia's invasion, the article concludes, the Air Force's arguments had not been lost on lawmakers. Just before Congress recessed, Mr. Murtha's subcommittee stated it would fund an additional $523 million towards the purchase of 20 more F-22 fighters beyond what the Air Force had asked for, quote unquote. The context here is the old, same old process of the Pentagon and a capitalist-dependent military engineering the crises, preparing for future war, and escalating the scale on an unprecedented basis. Maya, in an article of an important character by Morgan Strong, Russia-Georgia Crisis, Making Money on a New Cold War, amplitude of this reinvigorated targeting of Russia and China and the preparation for major global-scale military confrontation is delineated. The Russia-Georgia class has generated heated anti-Moscow rhetoric from John McCain about a new Cold War, a prospect that most people see in a negative light, but which military contractors view as a huge financial plus. One unstated reality about these new tensions between Washington and Moscow is that it is means a bonanza in military spending, billions of additional dollars for anti-missile weapon systems, larger armies, constructions of new bases throughout Eastern Europe. Indeed, the spending on Cold War II will dwarf what military contractors are now making on the War on Terror, and the spending of prospect of spending on both conflicts simultaneously makes arms industry executives drool. Others who stand to profit grandly from the new East-West showdown include the tough-talking politicians and their friends in Washington. The think tanks like Heritage, American Enterprise Institute, and CSIS, long fattening up on contributions from the defense industry and related corporations. There will be losers, like ordinary taxpayers who see all the dollars going to national security and none to domestic needs, from repairs to the crumbling infrastructure to the cost of health care, education, the environment, and social securities. In many ways, the exploitation of Cold War II is designed to divert money away from domestic needs to the coffers of the military-industrial complex, and about which there is nothing new. And the article delineates how at every conjuncture this has been the pattern. In 1975, with President General Ford confronting an internal Republican challenge from Ronald Reagan on the right, key figures associated with, quote, détente, unquote, were purged. Hardliners were given key jobs. National Security Advisor General Brent Scowcroft replaced Kissinger, precisely because he was advocating a major escalation in such expenditure. It's interesting to note that General Brent Scowcroft is the close working associate of who? Senator Joe Biden. You begin to get the picture here. Team B, including a young neocon named Paul Wolfowitz, tore into professionals who insisted that the Soviet Union was rapidly outstripping the United States as a strategic power, concluding that the Soviets were building a new generation of terrifying weapons, including undetectable nuclear subs. All of this is a historical context for the current preparation for a major confrontation, fueling a vast increase in weapons outlays and all of the elements of a major global confrontation, for which the Pentagon and its dependent capitalist corporations are licking their chops.
And Ralph, this is reminiscent of the Project for a New American Century, the PNAC, with its report before the President Bush candidacy, the first candidacy, when they said that a new Pearl Harbor would be necessary for the increase in military spending, reminiscent of the 2001, the 9/11 attack. But prior to the PNAC report, we have in 1997, Zbigniew Brzezinski, President Carter's national security advisor, and then a key advisor to President Clinton, writing The Grand Chessboard, American Primacy and Its Geostrategic Imperatives. As you recall, the title of this series is The Grand Chessboard 11 years later. And we are going to, in our next program, go into detail about The Grand Chessboard, because what we see unfolding here is the Grand Chessboard in great detail. As Brzezinski writes in The Grand Chessboard in 1997, prior to the PNAC report, quote, "The pursuit of power is not a goal that commands popular passion, except in conditions of a sudden threat or challenges to the public's sense of well-being. The economic self-denial, that is defense spending, and the human sacrifices, casualties even among professional soldiers, required in the effort are uncongenial to democratic instincts. Democracy is inimical to imperial mobilization." End quote. Now, this is something to keep in mind, as Ralph, you've been detailing the incredible expenditures for the military-industrial complex. These expenditures and their profits are to expand the imperial power, to get the resources of the Central Asia, the Caucasus, the oil, the gas, the minerals. And we've discussed this in our first program of The Grand Chessboard 11 years after, and we're going to go into much more detail in the next program in this series. But remember, none of this can take place without what Brzezinski has talked about, essentially a new Pearl Harbor, because the pursuit of power is not a goal that commands popular passion, and the ruling class understands that. Ralph?
Well, that is, in fact, the background, the context, the overall strategic perspective of the mouthpieces for American imperialism, constantly preparing for global seizure of resources, constantly provoking confrontations that will allow military buildup and fragmentation of other nations that are potential obstacles to the global imperium. That is the article that I was citing earlier in Consortium News by Morgan Strong. Is the context here to the crisis in Georgia. President Saakashvili, relying on his support in the United States for a precipitating event to attack South Ossetia, and indeed the American political elite led by Senator McCain and Bush, including the editorialist at the Washington Post, orchestrated the entire operation. It's interesting to note, by the way, we've been citing the role of the Israelis, the key role in this, and there's much more to say about that, which we'll get into in the next program. But a Georgian member of parliament lauded the IDF, the Israeli Armed Forces, for their central role in the military preparation for this confrontation. The Georgian Integration Minister Timur Yakobashvili had told the Jerusalem Post when he stated he felt proud as a Jew, thanks to the key role of Israelis in preparing the units in the Georgian military, confirming the reports to the Post by Israeli defense officials that Georgian elite troops had been put into motion by the Galilee Division Commander Brigadier General Gal Hirsch, who founded the Homan Magen Company. And indeed, what's interesting about this is that simultaneous and in coordination with these Israeli military operations preparing for the Georgian military attack were troops from where? From Atlanta, Georgia, brought to the Republic of Georgia for the confrontation. A large contingent of Georgia Army National Guards flown into the Republic of Georgia for joint military operations. The soldiers from the metro area were part of what was called Immediate Response 2008, the largest U.S. footprint on the crossroads of Asia and Europe since the Cold War began.
They arrived on July 14th.
That's correct. They arrived on July 14th. This is the key buildup for the military attack initiated by Georgia. And indeed, what's interesting as well about this is that the key aides to McCain, who had lobbied for Georgia, had been deeply involved in the coordination of this. Just as Cindy McCain has just been flown to Georgia to consult with Saakashvili, so indeed Joseph Biden is in close contact with McCain and with Saakashvili with respect to all of this. The large contingent, as the Atlanta Journal Constitution amplified, of the Georgia Army National Guard soldiers who were brought into this operation were in conjunction with the Israeli operations for this attack. This is a ruling class confrontation designed to provoke this crisis with Russia as the opportunity for massive, massive rearmament on a scale that we have not seen since the Reagan era. And that, by the way, just to make this point, Cheney to visit Georgia next week, the article in the New York Times on August 26th. The White House announced that in the highest diplomatic visit by the United States to the region, Cheney will visit from September 2nd. He will stop in Azerbaijan, Ukraine, and Italy to prepare for a coordinated response to Russia. You can see that the figures involved in this, from Joseph Biden to the Israeli military, to the McCains, to Robert Gates, to Bush, and to Condoleezza Rice, this is a unified ruling class upscaling of the confrontation with Russia and preparing for a military buildup of a size that has not been seen even since time of the confrontations with the former Soviet Union.
Ralph, it's not just the United States supplying Georgia. We have, as we've mentioned before, Israel supplied at least 8 different models of unmanned aerial vehicles, those are UAVs, and also a range of weapons such as battle tanks. and portions, the turrets for the battle tanks, to Georgia. And there were these UAVs, these unmanned aerial vehicles, or what we know as drones, very important in targeting where troops are. And the advisors, not only just advisors, these are key advisors. These are the people who trains, particularly the special forces, the commandos in Georgia. This is what the Israeli experts focused on, training these horrendous special forces. I want to return as we close to how we started the show, and that is the comments of the Chinese People's Daily. On May 9th, if we look at U.S.-Russian relations closely, it is clear that we are standing at the edge of a new Cold War. This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Grand Chessboard, 11 Years Later, Part 2, Target Russia, Preparing for Global War. We'll be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please contact us at takingaim@pacbell, that's PACBELL.net. We'll be with you next week.